You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Wait, we're recording?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Oh, it's already recording? All right.
All right. Well, so this is episode... Is this episode 176 now?
We're going with that.
All right. Episode 176. Today's news, I guess, the big news is the plane skidding off the runway in Turkey.
You've seen the pictures?
Terrifying.
It slid off the side of the runway.
Yeah, like, was the runway wet? Or did he, like, instead of trying to go to the end of the runway, veered it off, thinking that was better?
So it is a runway, from what I could tell in the picture, where you have to taxi back. So you get to the end and turn. There's a turnaround space.
Oh, do you think maybe he slipped off during the taxi back?
I can't. Like,
it would have to be a really wide turn.
So what do you do in that case? You don't want to deploy slides and get people off.
I have no idea how they got the people off.
Like, but, like, could you imagine the pandemonium? You've just gone off a cliff, and your first instinct is to get the fuck off the plane.
And the plane, like, because if you guys haven't seen the pictures, we'll try to, like, maybe I'll try to put a link or something in the show notes, but, like, the plane is...
At a 30-degree angle.
It's pointed pretty nose down.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't, like, stand up and walk down the aisle to get off. No. This is, like, sort of use the seats as a ladder to climb out angle. And I'm assuming that, like, the fire department brought some ladders down to, like, build a staircase to the rear exit doors. And did it that way. It's you can't open the doors, pop the slides, and like let people just jump into the ocean.
Yeah.
Hey, cliff diving, everybody.
Exactly.
Also, how are they going to get the plane out of there? And how long is it going to take? And are they going to keep land? They have to like keep landing other planes while it's sitting there, right? Because it's the only one runway at this airport. So now other people are going to fly in and be like, "Hey, look, let's hope we don't follow them."
Yeah.
That's got to be a little disconcerting.
Well, I mean, it's similar to the Asiana thing in San Francisco, right?
Like you're just like
where they left it on the side of the
you can't get rid of it instantaneously. I suspect what'll happen is it'll sit there until they can get a crane to pull it out. I suspect they're going to scrape up the belly pulling it out, so it's probably
you think they'll like tow truck it, just pull it back up.
Yeah, because I mean, what you can't. I don't think there's a crane that'll be able to lift that whole thing
without with the proper counterbalance to not flip into the ocean along with it. Yeah.
Well, I think like just looking at the damage, I mean, the right engine was off, and it
looked
like
engines are designed to pop off.
No, but I think like it took the piling with it.
The pylon,
like I think it actually took that whole thing, which I'm surprised it didn't rip the wing off when it did that. But
so yeah, I mean, in theory, like if the guy turned the gal turned the wrong way, trying to like make the turn for the taxi back and just drop the nose off,
it's like no big deal.
But then like the rest of the plane went with it.
Yeah, I think he was at speed.
Which
no, it's like a 90-degree angle of the runway. He couldn't have been at speed.
Unless he just veered it around. I mean, I don't know.
Unless when they went to turn, they accidentally pulled the throttle too much.
I pulled the wrong one.
Well, and I feel like...
We will certainly learn more soon.
And what's amazing, though, is that no one was hurt.
Yeah.
Everybody's fine. And
which suggests to me that they weren't moving that fast when it fell off.
Yeah.
When it slid off. And then, like... And no one had decided to stand up and start walking around.
Which, on our BA flight the other day, people were up and moving. Did you notice that? Up and moving before we were even anywhere close to the gate, and no one said anything.
Well, it's like Spain. Like people, like I remember flying to Barcelona. When we went to Barcelona a couple years ago, soon as the airplane touched the runway, everyone just starts standing up and pulling luggage down, and no one said anything.
That's actually one of the, you know, among other reasons I like window seats. I've decided that it's not being in the aisle where people are going to drop stuff on me is actually a safety precaution at this point because people do get up and start pulling. Like I can, if it's over me, I'll be like, "No, we're not at the gate yet. Sit your ass down." And I'll say that to people from time to time, and usually they yell back at me, so it stops being so productive. But not being able to have things drop on my head is like now part of my thought process. By the way, Wizz Air, everybody applauded when we landed from Bulgaria to...
We made it, thank God.
No, they were just that excited to be in Memmingen.
Munich West. Munich West, baby. Anyways, this incident in Turkey, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. And the photos, when I first saw it, I just like flipped my laptop around to Foz. I was like, "Look at this." He goes, "Holy crap."
Yeah.
It's just like, it takes you off guard at first.
It'll buff right out.
Yeah. Other news, SATA is struggling. The Azores airline is not.
They renamed, right? They're now Azores Air?
Yeah, Azores Air, sorry. We call them SATA because that's what we were going to fly to Punta Delgada. Yeah.
Maybe they refunded us our tickets when this freak hurricane hit two years ago, January, that's caused this whole. Good economic collapse.
Like, a downward spiral.
They didn't get the publicity of being featured on a Dots, Lines, and Destinations episode.
We drive business. What can I say?
Submit your advertising requests now.
I say we drive business for alcohol for the people listening to us have to drink to get there.
Yeah, I mean, something like that.
Anyways. So I will admit to having only read the headline and the teaser of the article that I guess Foz, you shared Did you read the whole article?
I did, and they're just, they need cash.
Yeah, because like the headline is like, they're hundreds of million dollars in debt. They need a cash infusion to right the ship. And I'm like, well, right, that's what debt means.
Well, but they're like weeks from shutting down at this point. It's drastically upside down, and the speculation is that, I love this, they're blaming the A310s.
Because
they're so costly to operate. So they believe that all the other, because now they're moving to 321s, they will be able to right the ship very quickly.
Okay. but couldn't have bothered to, like, retire the 310s years ago because,
you know,
didn't have the cash because no one trusted that they were actually going to ever write their ships and no one would loan them the money?
I don't know how your cost structure changes that much from going from a 310 to 321, where you go from red to black.
Because
that's generally not one of the biggest costs an airline sees. Fuel and labor are generally the two bigger costs.
So fuel is going to be part of the OPEX of the aircraft.
That's true.
So I can see the fuel part. Labor, fewer crew, right? It's a smaller plane.
Is it?
You said 321. It's really...
How many seats does the 310 have?
Aren't they moving to a 330 too?
They have a 330. The 330 chasm is definitely low compared to the 310. How many seats do they have on their 310s?
I don't know, but I imagine it's around 150 or less.
Because the 310?
Yeah. 310's not that big of a plane.
It has to be more than 150 though. 310's a twin aisle, isn't it?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it.
It's not a 762, is it?
It's on a 762 scale.
250 or 150, you're saying?
That's crazy. I'm going to say 150.
I think you're nuts.
Well, let's find out.
I also now really, if it was that small, I'm really pissed I didn't fly it.
Aren't they still flying it?
Because remember, this 310 was a shorter version of the 300.
There's 9 seats in the front section. 9. There's 18 seats in the front section. It's 8 across. There's a whole bunch of seats, man. It goes like to row 39.
Starts at what?
1. No, 11 to 39. So that's 28 rows of economy at 8 across.
That's 160, 170-ish, somewhere in there.
Plus 20, so it's like 200 seats. Yeah, so the 321, really? God, that's small. No, Stephen. It's like 26 rows times 8 across is more than 100. It's 200 seats. It's like 250, 240.
Yeah.
It's like 240. So it's the 321, its highest density is only 240. It's a little smaller. You save maybe one flight crew, but the cost per seat mile drops significantly.
Right, because of fuel costs in there.
Fuel and just regular maintenance and everything else.
But then the question is, how much cargo are they moving? Because they lose cargo capacity in that process, too. Because they are the connection to the rest of the world for Puerto Delgado.
Yeah, sure, for all the Azores. How much is it import or export? Presumably it's import.
Yeah.
It's palletized still, right?
The 321 can be. Mm-hmm. You have the smaller pallet, but they can put them in smaller containers. Not palletized, but containerized.
Yeah.
You can do containers.
222.
Okay.
So you're both wrong.
You were definitely wrong.
He was closer without going over.
Anyways.
When's the price it right?
Am I surprised that they're having problems? No. The part about this whole story that surprised me, like, oh no, we just need a couple bucks and everything will be fine. Like, I don't buy that at all. So, I think that
Can we pin this on Delta starting JFK,
Puerto Delgado service?
I think what they should do is, like, really do the Iceland layover thing.
Yeah.
All that.
I mean, so Delta's been posting some interesting pictures of Puerto Delgado on their Instagram. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. Now I'm like, I want to go.
I actually wanted to go when we booked the tickets.
We were going to go to that abandoned hotel.
Well, we can go now.
On Delta?
No, we can do the Toronto and Boston lines before they close. We've got 2 weeks.
What are you doing next week, Seth?
Well, I mean, technically,
what are the chances of a second hurricane in January?
I'll be there. I'll be in New York. I mean, we can just go to Boston and catch that for the weekend.
We should talk after this episode ends. My wife will kill me.
So, Lufthansa is being kind of critical of Alitalia and saying they should what, Seth?
Lufthansa wants Alitalia to... Well, Lufthansa is one of the carriers trying to buy Alitalia.
Yep.
They've confirmed their interest. Air France KLM has confirmed their disinterest. They apparently, someone was rumoring that they were involved again, and late last week they issued a statement saying, no, we really just don't want to get anywhere near that flaming tire fire of ridiculousness.
Which is interesting because they're part of the JV.
Yes. And everybody assumed like a couple years ago when they brought them into the JV, there was like an investment and everything.
Yeah,
and
then
I think... My theory on that is they already understand what it's like running the two separate, wholly different cultures. And unlike sort of Swiss, Austrian, Brussels Airlines, Lufthansa, where they've sort of aligned some of the culture stuff, Air France KLM doesn't try to do that as much.
Yeah. They'd still run them as two separate.
They run them. They're all separate, but I feel like Air France-KLM runs them way more separate than either IAG or Lufthansa Group does.
No, and that's what I was getting at. Yeah. Like, you know, when you're like, they even advertise Lufthansa Group, you know, everything as a Lufthansa Group airline. They don't on Air France-KLM.
Yeah, and like, Lufthansa Group is moving towards a common booking platform that they can have a single web interface that's skinned for whichever airline it's supposed to be.
And consolidated aircraft purchases.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of those things. IAG did it for aircraft as well. It's unclear, right, I think?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
unclear to me that...
On the narrow bodies, I think.
Yeah, on the narrow bodies. It's unclear to me that Air France-KLM is moving in that direction. So, also, I'll tell you, it's like a disaster.
Well, I don't think Air France-KLM is really moving that way because they were still...
No, they're not. Right, that's what I'm saying. But... Did they move some of the 787s, I feel like, maybe from Air France?
I think the 787s, yeah, but like KLM still, I think they're still buying narrow bodies from Boeing, or they have a bunch and they have no plans of getting rid of them.
Yeah.
And so Air France has pretty much given up on that.
On Boeing?
On Boeing, yeah, other than the 777s and the 78s.
So, anywho, the story there is that Alitalia, you know, a year in now to this bankruptcy, what's going to happen? And Lufthansa wants a piece of it. But they put out a statement saying, yeah, of course, we're very interested in this. EasyJet has also expressed interest. I don't think IAG did. There was one other that was maybe interested, but...
Delta. No, it wasn't Delta. I do know what I forget which one the third one was.
Oh, it was like, it was the U.S. investment group.
Right.
It's not Cerberus, but it sounds like that a little bit. It's some private investors that want to come in and try to take it over. And... Basically, what Lufthansa has gone on record as saying is, like, yeah, we think we want most of their airplanes. We would fire like a third of the people working there and shut down the ground handling operation. And, you know, when you think of it logically, that seems like a pretty good way to sort of right the ship, is get rid of half your staffing costs. And so there's people that have said that's not really their problem, but I'm not sure I believe it. it's the Lufthansa comments are interesting. We also talked about this a little bit. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before or something with the Nikki thing and Lufthansa getting kicked out of that. Is would the European regulators let Lufthansa take Alitalia?
I mean, I will at least say they've at least fixed some of the Rome disaster. They with some of the new construction they finished
when yeah.
it was there in November is actually a much more tolerable airport.
The U.S. departures still have to go to a wholly separate building and then bus back to the regular terminal.
Well, I don't know on arrival what happens because I was
no, doing departures.
So they are in this remote terminal, but it's now connected via train to the main building. So you no longer have that shed that you go check into.
Okay.
That's all gone.
Yeah, that was a few years ago.
And... Yeah, I did that not that long ago. It was just a disaster. But yeah. now you at least go to the main terminal. And they've got a very nice shopping area, brand new, food and everything. And then you can take the train from there to the remote building.
Was that one of the airports that half burned down?
Yes.
So that's why this all happened?
Unclear if that's why it happened.
Or they actually realized that people hated it?
Yeah.
Right, that's my question. Were they forced to upgrade it because they burned it down? Or did they actually
have plans to? The fire was on the departure side of one of the buildings.
Okay.
It wasn't like in the check-in area.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but that's when I flew there a couple years ago. I saw where the fire damage was. It was not.
All right. Yeah. So anyhow, so it's just interesting to me in that regard of like, are the regulators going to let Lufthansa grow that much more? And arguably, you could say there's way more competition with other airlines because they don't also own Meridiana, right? The argument is Lufthansa Group also owned Austrian, which is the Meridiana equivalent at that point, or vice versa. Nikki's probably smaller, but yeah, I don't know. It'll be what it will be. Someone eventually has to buy out Alitalia. I do have to wonder if they'll keep the name. Would you?
No. It seems cursed.
You think it's got that much of a negative connotation to it?
Is it cursed within Italy or only outside? That's the thing I can't figure out. And I have some followers who are Italian who we've had discussions about this when they released their, 1.5 million point reward the other day of like, well, it's awful and this and that, but it's who we have and it's what we do. And so we like them anyways. It's a little Stockholm syndrome, but...
National pride.
Yeah. Well, right. So, and you have to assume that most of the passengers are.
But that's okay. I mean,
Italians.
Cutters came out and said that Meridiana is going to be Italian's national carrier.
That's true.
So,
I wish them great luck in that. Exactly. Well, they're going to add a couple dozen new planes and start flying Milan long haul routes. It's with everybody else.
But if EasyJet does win the bid, what are they going to do with all the wide bodies?
It's unclear.
Like it doesn't fit their business model.
That's correct.
But then again, losing money doesn't fit their business model either, so...
They probably have a plan.
It might be time to change that business model for Alitalia.
Yeah, but, Alitalia has some... There's only like 140 planes in the fleet. It's cut back significantly on the short-haul stuff anyways, in the face of competition. So it could very well be that the EasyJet bid is only for short-haul operations anyways.
True.
All right, Lufthansa said they only want some parts of it. So EasyJet could easily say the same thing. It also could be that they're doing it for the slots at the airport in Rome, and they could, you know, ground or otherwise dispose of the long haul fleet at some later point in time and tell the crew to piss off. Not sure that's a good plan, but.
Well, I mean, what would Lufty do with it? Do they need another long haul gateway or two more long haul gateways?
Need is a relative term.
I would probably, I mean, your North Africa connections and Africa connections in general would probably be better out of Rome.
Than Brussels?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I mean, I think you could supplement that service just from, you know, like especially like Tunisia and Morocco.
North Africa stuff?
Yeah, the North Africa stuff, because it is such a short hop that it's...
Morocco's a little far west, but I see where you're going with the Tunisia, Algeria, Algiers,
and like the historic kind of French-Italian countries that, you know, had colonialization there. I don't know. Or it could be another Middle East connection point, too. They could feed traffic through there.
Yeah, but you still got to feed traffic. That's the thing. It's like you don't double hop.
True.
So, I don't know. Yeah. And you got Norwegian coming in now, taking Rome as its next, you know, one of its next hubs.
Maybe that's what they're seeing, too. Maybe that's what Lufthansa's seeing, is like, we got to stamp some of this out a little bit.
Yeah, how's Lufthansa going to stamp that out, though?
I don't know. Marketing?
We promise you won't get a high fly A340 sub.
Every now and then, yeah.
Wamos 747.
I saw that show up the other day in the United JFK. States. Yeah.
It was after the blizzard, while Norwegian was trying to get everything back to normal, they brought the Wamos 74 in, which is funny to me only because it happened 3 days after the CEO went on record, I think with a Reuters interview, saying, we're going to dramatically cut our costs in 2018 to right the ship. And one of the ways we're going to do that is, we're not going to have to lease third-party aircraft anymore. It's sort of like the Delta saying, we'll never cancel flights except for, you know, we'll never cancel flights anymore, and then immediately having a massive failure at their operations. That was the Atlanta power outage, right?
Yep.
It's like, guys, I know you're very confident and you want to project this, like, we know what we're doing thing, but maybe stop caring so much about Wall Street and trying to convince them that you're geniuses and just run your business and let them discover that you're a genius by actually being one.
By merit, yeah.
So...
In other words, keep your mouth shut. You keep jinxing yourself.
You triggered something interesting. The weather in the South. Charleston.
Oh, yes. It's an amazing story.
It is.
Charleston, South Carolina does not have de-icing trucks. Well, it does now. It has one.
Has it arrived?
Yeah, it flew in last night.
Okay.
Saturday it flew.
It has a truck, not trucks.
It has a truck. Boeing's Dreamlifter operation requires, you know, they use that. It's their modified 747.
Yep.
They use those to fly fuselage pieces and wing pieces for the 787 assembly, amongst other things. And there's a fleet of five of them that crisscross the globe.
And wings.
Wings, yeah. Fuselage and wing assemblies. And so with Charleston, with the bomb cyclone blizzard thing a couple weeks ago, Charleston was closed for 5 days, the whole airport, because the runways were frozen and the planes couldn't de-ice. There's a combination of both problems. And that really screwed up Boeing's manufacturing process because they, you know, manufacture planes there and they need to get the supplies in. And they're very keen on this sort of just-in-time inventory. And you can't have just fuselage chunks sitting around not going through assembly lines and things like that. So the Dreamlifter schedule got out of whack. And that's going to, you know, has long-term ramifications for the company. And so they realized that there's another storm coming over the weekend, last weekend now by the time this airs, and early in the week. And they still didn't have a de-icing truck. And they were going to be having Dreamlifters that potentially would get stuck in Charleston without a de-icing truck available. And so they flew one in.
On an Antonov 124.
On an Antonov 124.
The only plane that could carry such a piece of cargo.
No, the 225 could carry it.
Well, that would be ridiculous. And it's operated by Volga Dnieper, which is the Ukrainian. It's a Ukrainian plane and a Ukrainian company.
Mm-hmm. Cargo operator.
Cargo operator. And they are authorized for flights to, from, and via the United States, but not flights within the United States. It's essentially cabotage. It's a foreign carrier operating a domestic U.S. flight. It happens to be cargo, not passengers, but it is...
The same concept.
It's the same concept. It's cabotage. And so on Friday afternoon late, they applied to the DOT for a waiver citing emergency circumstances that required their ability to run this cargo flight. And around, I want to say, it landed at 8, so maybe noonish Pacific time, 3 o'clock Eastern time. On Saturday, the plane left Payne Field with a de-icing truck and 8 tons of glycol.
Yep.
And got to Charleston. So Charleston now has a de-icing truck. They flew it in. And what's most amazing to me about that is one of my friends who works at a cargo company, a cargo airline company, was shocked just based on the cost of typically running one of those cargo flights based on, you know, the size of the plane and the number of hours. It would probably cost more to fly it and then to buy a new one.
So the question is, if they didn't get that approval, would they then fly the truck out of the country and then back in, or fly one in from somewhere else?
Fly it up to, drive it up to Vancouver?
Yeah.
It's not that far.
No.
Well, would you have to fill out a customs declaration importing it into Canada?
You might have to.
That gets awkward paperwork-wise.
But do you buy one in Canada?
Like, just
and then ship that?
Well, it's also, and so one of the questions is, why don't you just, like, call someone in Atlanta and drive one over?
Or why didn't you, like, at least, why didn't you use a Dreamlifter?
If it wouldn't fit?
How would it not fit?
I think it would fit, but there's a problem with mounting and tie-downs and stuff.
Well, I don't think you can drive it in.
And you
that's the thing, is it's a drive-on, drive-off on the 1-2-4.
If you, because the Dreamlifter, like, the front spins open, yep. So they can pull things in and out, but you'd have to, like, build a special ramp to drive it in.
And you have
to
transport the ramp with you. And
that's true, because you have to get it out.
Yeah. just drive it right off, Hank. It'll be fine.
And, you know, you don't want to damage your Dreamlifters.
Yeah.
Those are pretty specialized hardware.
Well, I just wonder, like, was there a better way of doing this?
I mean, so one of the questions that came up was, like, why don't you just buy one somewhere on the East Coast and, or borrow one from, like, a local airport? All the other local airports are also having the same weather, so they need it, right? Do you guys remember there was a airport Twitter thread a couple weeks ago of, like, a bunch of airports all got together and replied to each other about their de-icing plans?
No.
Vancouver started it. They had, like, 60 different airports on this conversation, which was kind of neat. Just shows off that, like, the reply thing on Twitter works now. You don't have to count the characters.
Yeah.
The Orlando airport posted theirs, though. And they actually do have a de-icing truck, but, like, here's how we de-ice. And they just posted, like, they posted just an empty picture of, like, the sun in Florida.
And it was, like, that Houston's, too. And then Houston's like, oh, crap, that didn't work last time.
Well, what's really funny is, like, 2 weeks later or a week later was the blizzard, the bomb cyclone, and Orlando actually had to pull their truck out and use it. And so posted a picture of that, and Vancouver made a lot of fun of them on Twitter. It was like, you know, a Twitter play in two acts. Haha, guys, we just used sunshine. Then the screen grab of that next to, dang, we had to take our truck out and use it.
Wah, 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 wah.
At least they have one, because that could have been a real mess.
They have one. Tampa doesn't, if I remember correctly. They use the let the sun warm it up approach, because on the off chance there's, you know, it can get frosty.
Yeah.
Down there, but it's, you know.
You just delay the flight till the sun comes up.
Yeah, you delay the flight from 6:30 to 8:30 and it's fine, usually.
What's the pilot doing out there with a magnifying glass?
Why does that guy have a hairdryer?
Yeah. Turkish? There's a picture of, like, guys on Turkish, like, actually, like, trying to dump water on the wing or something to thaw it out. Like, jumping buckets of hot water to try to de-ice the wing. It was bad.
They're out there with a scraper. They're out there with the glove.
Your Airbus de-icing glove.
Yeah.
We got de-iced the other day on Wizz Air coming out of Sofia. We got de-iced, but not anti-iced.
Well, we got nothing coming out of Chicago while everyone else was getting de-iced.
You really enjoy it when that happens to you, don't you?
I'm like, wait a second. Why are they de-icing the A319, but not the 767?
You know, different metrics.
And I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, doesn't the A319 have boots on the front of the wings? Like, isn't that the last plane you needed to do that to? But whatever. Yeah.
I thought that was the hipster chariot.
That's the Q400 has boots for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Charleston now has the de-icing truck. They can join the party.
I think it's awesome. And hilarious. And you know, actually, in Charleston news, the 787-10 returned to Charleston yesterday after flight testing up in Payne and Moses Lake and everything. So that to me is like a signal that
ready for delivery.
It could be coming up soon. Yeah.
Who's the first delivery?
Who is it? It's not United. It's
no.
ANA.
Maybe or
ANA or Qatar Airways seem to be first flight type folks, but I don't know.
Or was it Singapore? Because they're getting Dash 10s too, right?
Are they?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If that order still stands. I don't know if it still stands.
They might be annoyed at Boeing right now.
Yeah.
Anything in particular?
This nonstop Singapore flights. I think they have a little chip on their shoulder that United can do them on the 789s.
And they have to...
They can't do LA. Singapore's the... San Francisco's as long as they can go. Until they get the ULRs.
Right, and that's just... I mean, they could super weight restrict it, but that's stupid.
Yeah.
Marriott and China.
And Delta.
Little kerfuffle going on there.
So here's the thing that I'm struggling with on that front. So background, Delta and Marriott each had Tibet and Taiwan listed as countries of origin, of countries of residency.
Hong Kong.
One of them had Hong Kong also.
Yeah. And it was a survey from a third party. It wasn't even them.
Was
directly.
It?
Yeah.
I was going to say, so there my comment was going to be, neither of them I think are that stupid, but someone, if they had Tibet listed on both of them, someone bought a bad list.
Yeah.
And so if it was a third party survey, then that makes a little more sense. But like, I just, they both fly or they operate in Taiwan. Delta has flights there still, right?
They have a Taipei Narita.
Narita?
I believe.
Or Seattle?
Or is that gone? Seattle?
No, they don't have Seattle.
Whatever. They do or have done business there. Marriott has properties there. Like, what do they do on their regular website for those searches?
Well, United says Taipei, Taiwan.
Right.
Right.
Taiwan, yes. Hong Kong, they do special administrative region.
Right.
I don't know Tibet.
No, you don't list Tibet. Tibet is stupid.
Yeah.
It's not actually a real country anymore. Listing Tibet is how you know someone's screwed up. But
the others is what's interesting, because like even we talked about, like I did my GE renewal, and it lists, you know, which countries did you visit? And I brought this up, and I said, well,
Hong Kong's not
on there, but China is, and then Taiwan is, and Macau is. That makes no sense. Like, Macau, okay, fine. Still technically part of China.
It's a SAR, just like Hong Kong.
Exactly. So why is Hong Kong not on there? And then Taiwan's listed as its own country.
Singapore.
Oh, in Singapore.
No, sorry. Singapore's the launch customer for the 10.
I was right. Hey, look at that.
That.
I got something.
It's been painted.
Because, let's see, Hong Kong's special administrative region. Taiwan is Republic of China.
So Taiwan is actually disputed.
The People's Republic of China is what it technically...
Yeah, Taiwan is a disputed province / country, while Hong Kong and Macau are... Not.
SARs, yeah.
So I think it's just interesting. Like, even the GE list seems a little screwy.
Yeah.
And so China's kind of bitten down hard on Delta and Marriott,
right? Yeah, cut off their websites.
Well, not Delta. Delta, they had to issue an apology.
Okay.
Marriott, that's the other thing, is there's some question as to why there's different treatment between the two. Marriott got their app and website shut down for a week, blocked for a week. Delta just had to issue a public apology.
Hmm. China Eastern? Do you think China Eastern helped soothe that?
Since they are partners with...
3%, Delta owns 3% of it.
Yeah. The relationship with China is probably a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Hey, guy. You can be the guy that works on that partner desk. Hey, listen, need a favor of you. We got this little thing happen. Do you guys have a phone number? Just a guy we can call?
Could you call our behalf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I do with Foz. I'm like, Foz, you're 1K, right? Can you call United for me?
As we established last week's episode, you really don't like people. So.
No, I don't.
Definitely don't like talking on the phone.
And then let's talk about AA agents and them not preferring to give out compensation.
Well, yeah. So they rolled out a new tool to the flight attendants, so that United and Delta have had, and apparently it's a tool that the gate agents have had.
Like iSolve or something?
iSolve, which someone should be punished for naming it that to begin with. But nonetheless, and one of the first complaints that came out of the flight attendants was...
So wait, the app's goal is...
To be able to compensate passengers on board in case of problem. So gate agents have had access to this app for a while.
So if something doesn't work or seat's broken...
Yeah.
They log it, and you get points.
Yeah. And they do points. They don't do cash, apparently, unlike United or Delta. But one of the first complaints that came out of the AA flight attendants was, well, now the passengers know we can do issue compensation. They'll harass us for it.
To be fair, we know people that have purposely gotten on airplanes and broken things to get compensation and then harassed the flight attendants to get it.
Well, but some of the more egregious ones subsequently have gotten banned as well.
I'm just saying the flight attendants aren't wrong in that the people will do this sort of thing.
Right, but I think that's a general minority.
Yes, it's not many of them, but...
And you could, in software, you could very easily code people who are repeat offenders, because now you're tracking it in the old days, you were just handing a certificate over.
Right.
To a blind person. Now you can see what kind of
It's much quicker to run a report and say, who's the top 3% of our complainers?
Well, not just that. When the flight attendant pulls it up, you can change the compensation on demand, because it's all connected.
Or you could say that this person, yeah, we took your report,
yeah,
and then not give them any compensation for it.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how much of it is real-time versus...
Well, I know the United one is the pricing comes back to how the offers they give you is based on how much you claim. There is some indication that there is some stuff going on the back end.
So it is somewhat real-time?
Yeah.
I mean, I know they're all connected devices. I would assume there has to be a default built-in of, if we're offline, do something else also.
There's different tiers
of
the severity of the issue.
Sure. And, United has historically tied it to your status.
No, within that, there's also different tiers.
Right. So, like, severity of issue and your status and paid fare class or not.
Exactly.
And then that trifecta becomes, the math to figure out what your comp is going to be. But, like, for the same issue on the same flight on the same fare, people in different status typically get different offers.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And then last up.
Oh, America's also getting new uniforms.
Oh, yeah. That they can't complain about, right?
Well.
Well, we'll see.
Land's End is replacing whoever the old people are. The old people continue to insist that there's no problem.
Doesn't Sears own Land's End?
I have no idea.
They did own them at one point. I don't know if they still do. Which, okay. Sears is failing?
They might not be in business in 2 years when they're final.
Very possible.
So that's the other thing. It's going to take them 2 years because they're going to redesign everything.
Sheesh.
And then produce it and then process and blah, 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 blah. And so the flight attendants are complaining that they're getting sick and the flight deck also. And now they're going to have to still wait a couple years to get these new uniforms. And it's amazing to me that it takes a couple years for that to happen.
Yeah, it's a long time to roll out.
Like, we don't need to fully redesign them. Like, make clothes that look like these and start producing them.
Please. Please hurry.
And I'm clearly not, like, a fashion anything.
Yeah. So. What about the Hilton Honors changes, Seth? You read into this. I didn't read up on it.
So, rollover nights.
Okay.
For status. Good news. Bad news, no double dipping anymore.
So you can't earn on an airline and with the hotel.
And you get, yeah, and you don't get, like, the points plus points even double dip.
Mm.
So, the good news is, if you have status, your earning goes up on straight points, for the most part, it would appear. There's also, if you stay 60 nights, you can give away a gold membership, and if you stay 100 nights, you can give away a diamond membership,
mm-hmm.
which the latter, that seems ridiculous to me, that yeah. you can give away diamond for, like, a companion diamond that way. But I think that's begging to be, create a black market of fake diamond status.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, I don't know, giving away top tier that way seems weird to me. But I guess some other airlines do it sometimes, but anyways. So it's a mixed bag. It's the real question is though, you know, when you're losing the points and you know the points and points, this double dip thing, what does that do for your occasional customer?
Could possibly push them somewhere else because
I'm a very occasional.
Yeah.
At any hotel brand, right? I'm not particularly tied to anyone, despite having a lot of nights. And so, for my Hilton stays though, it depended on the rates and this and that. But there was often with like the you know my rate kind of thing, you get a couple percent off and the points. Usually you could justify, even for like 2 or 3 stays a year, booking direct and taking the extra points and getting some value out of it.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that's the case anymore.
Hmm. Okay.
Right? Do I just go to hotels.com and get the 10% kickback of what Hotel Rewards is?
Yeah. It's a good question.
Or Welcome Rewards, I'm sorry. So that's one of my challenges with that program change. At the same time, the airline points had to be stupidly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their claim is that they weren't issuing that many. Not many people are taking advantage of the double dip.
Yeah, no one was using it, so we just got rid of it to make things easier.
Sure.
Yeah. How many different times have we heard that?
Well, it wasn't that they said no one. They said the percentage of people using it was small, which might actually be true.
The percentage of people redeeming long-haul premium cabin awards is small, so it's okay that we're jacking the price up 30%.
That's fair.
How many times have we heard?
No.
Here's the thing. It's almost certainly true, right? The default was not to do that, so someone would have to understand that it was a thing and log in and set up their system and whatever. But also, that's not what, you know, you have to, it still costs you money.
But I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt because they've been doing a lot of other positive changes.
Yeah.
So I'm inclined to think that maybe it wasn't all a cost-cutting measure.
I think it was definitely cost-cutting, but it could have had other factors also. Yeah. I'll grant that. I mean, fine. They're not absolutely jerks.
I mean, it's not like Delta randomly changing award prices, you know, and then saying, oh, we're putting it on sale at the old price.
Well, that some of the sales are actually lower, but Delta swears that they're having a higher net promoter score because of it.
Hmm.
And causation correlation is definitely challenging, but they're getting higher net promoter scores on SkyMiles and continuing to grow their Amex signups, which is arguably the best metric for how much people like your program. In some ways, right? People still think the points are valuable enough that they're trying to get them.
True.
So, and they blame/credit the ability to get very targeted and differentiated on the pricing of awards for that.
Hmm.
And they're apparently also growing in Seattle now.
Oh, yeah?
They added three new routes. Dulles, Indianapolis. What's the last one?
It was somewhere that Delta's or Alaska's flying.
Kansas City.
Yep. It's a direct.
Yeah, that's
Alaska competition thing.
Sweet.
On SkyWest, no less.
They're all SkyWest flight. Well, Dulles won't be, but Kansas City and Indianapolis will, right?
Yeah.
Indianapolis is a 319.
Oh, okay.
Dulles is a 738. Kansas City is a E175.
So Kansas City you can fly on Alaska or on Delta, but either way it's SkyWest.
Yep.
Sweet. Actually, No.
Alaska's a main.
Alaska thing. Pulled Kansas City down, I thought.
From Portland.
Oh, only from Portland?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Yeah.
So going back to that Trabzon airport in Turkey.
Yes.
I was looking at the photos more. The turnaround for the runway is on the other side of the runway. So the guy turned the opposite direction. And it is not a 90-degree angle. Oh. He just happened to go down the hill at a 90-degree angle from the runway. It is more of a veer off when you look at the photo.
I'm going to ask you to pat where like the slide actually
happened. Do you see the
tracks, yeah.
You can see the marks. Even on the runway, you can see kind of where he went off.
Yeah, you can. He definitely went the wrong way. The turn seems to have started almost where the...
So do you think he's like, oh, left? You mean the other left?
Other left!
Yeah, I'm still amazed that people... Oh, they did deploy a slide. The rear left side looks like a slide deployed.
Yeah.
Which is creepy because that was like, you know, down to the ocean.
It's like someone opened the door, started sliding, and they're like, oh, this was a mistake.
Slide deploys, wait, I ain't going, you go first.
You go.
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, that's they definitely veered the wrong way. I mean, how else do you end up on a cliffside? But.
So yeah, I think that's the show. Yeah. You can find us on Twitter, at dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment, tweet us, happy to hear from you.
Take care.
See you later.